Righto, Jeff, you there, mate? Unmute yourself, buddy. If you can hear me.
Yes, I can hear you indeed. I've just got a whole heap of people sending me SMSs saying I don't have the link for the webinar. And I'm sorry, I'm just going to ignore them.
Oh, really? Go on. Yeah. We've got a couple of minutes. It's in their email, so I don't quite get what that's all about. But anyway, they got a reminder yesterday and a reminder an hour ago as well. So tell them to check their spam folders, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm doing. So,
all right, mate, I'm going to start. I'm going to press go now. I've got record happening. Let's get this baby on the road.
Done.
Okay. Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Andrew Griffiths here. How you doing? Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Clarity webinar. Mamma mia. We've got a great webinar ahead. I can't wait to get started. Got a good friend of mine on the line as well, which is going to be fabulous, Mr. Jeff Hetherington, who's going to be able to offer some advice. More about that in a couple of minutes. I've tried to use some nice, calming kind of images just to make sure, of course, that we're, you know, getting clear type of stuff. And obviously, a few of the details, we'll make sure that this webinar, we're recording it. We'll give you access to that down the line as well. But generally, you know, staying on the line is going to be the way to get clear today, I think. Righto, before we dive too far, let's just have a little bit of a chat and get a little bit of clarity ourselves around this concept. You know, who the hell has got time to be clear? We're too busy doing what we're doing. And when I first started talking to Jeff and thinking a bit about the idea of doing a webinar on clarity, I thought I'll do a little bit of homework. And so I thought I'll go to the dictionary and look up clarity, you know, like you're doing a terrible speech. Oxford's dictionary defines clarity. And it's got a one-word response. And that one-word response is clearness. I thought, well, that's freaking very, very helpful. So clarity. The definition is clearness, useless. But the reality for me is that I find that I get asked all the time from people that, you know, that they struggle to be clear. They say, I'm confused. I've got so much stuff going around in my head. I feel stuck. I can't make a decision because all this stuff is rattling around in my head. I'm uncertain. I'm fatigued by a lack of clarity, etc. We all know what it feels like to be laser sharp and really, really clear on something, how you're really unstoppable. Yet when you've got all this fog happening in your brain, it's just difficult. And the fog is caused by stress, too many opportunities, not enough opportunities, worrying about stuff, all of the rest of it. So I think it's a really big and very relevant topic to be talking about. And now, to talk about it, who else could I possibly engage in, rope them into doing a webinar, but Mr. Jeff Hetherington, who is the Clarity CEO. Now, Jeff and I have known each other for a number of years now, and I've worked with Jeff in a number of roles. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about him and his background, and then I'm going to tell you about my experience with Jeff. So, as I said, Jeff is the Clarity CEO. He's a global expert on attaining business and personal clarity, and he's worked with hundreds of business owners and executives, help them detangle issues, solve problems, lower stress, make more money, all of those kind of things. That's why he's the national coach for the healthcare business group and also the key person of influence. And I know many of you on the call here today will have spoken to Jeff. You will have been a part of, been on the receiving end of one of his silver bullet sessions as well. And just on passing, Jeff's made an amazing offer on this webinar. Anyone who wants can get a free session with him, a free silver bullet session valued at $300. I'll tell you about that at the end there, but really generous of him. Jeff's been described as irreverent, insightful. It's funny how the two go hand in hand. But he's also been a very high-level CEO and general manager, you know, with companies including Amcal, Coles Myer, Vodafone, Camera House, and Telstra. So, you know, he's used to dealing with the bigger issues. Today, you know, Jeff is a business advisor through a company called Dancing Blind Man, which is just hilarious. But he diagnoses, tunes up businesses so that the owners, managers, everyone can regain control, work less, play more, make more money again. That's the bio of Jeff. From my experience of knowing Jeff in the last few years, I found him to be an extraordinary, genuine man with a overwhelming desire to want to help people in whatever shape or form that is. So at the moment, it's around helping them to get clear in their business because he, like me, understands what it's like when people are struggling. He's extraordinarily skilled at helping people to get unstuck. And that's what he's called in for by many organizations. And even for myself, you know, if I'm not clear about something, Jeff's the guy that I pick up the phone and talk to. And he's, on top of that, he's also passionate about helping people, business, the whole thing, which I think I've mentioned, but I'm going to say it again because I think that that's what is so extraordinary about him. So I've given him a big rap, but believe me, Jeff does live up to this reputation. So let's get him on the line. Jeff, are you there, my friend?
I am. Good morning, Andrew. Good morning, everyone. And Andrew, thank you for such a glowing introduction. I was sitting here in the room looking over my shoulder for this other bloke, and I realized it was me you were talking about.
Great to have you on the line, mate. Jeff, I might just get you to move a little bit closer to the microphone if I can there, my friend. Just you just got quiet on us. You know, I know you're not a shy and humble kind of a person. So, well, you're a humble person, but you're not shy. So tell us, how did you come to be known as the Clarity CEO? How do you develop that reputation?
Look, I've had a real passion for this concept of clarity for probably 10, 15 years. Every role I've had, I've found a large part of it was actually helping organisations, whether it was here or in Asia, develop a very clear path towards the goals and the outcomes they wanted to set. So I was in Melbourne about 12 months ago with a good friend of mine, Travis Bell, who is the bucket list guy, and he's also been my coach off and on for a number of years. And he told me that he was just really impressed at how quickly I caught through to clarity. He said, it's like you're the boss of clarity. And I'm like, oh. And then he said, you know what? You're the Clarity CEO. And I thought, hey, I like that. So hence the Clarity CEO was born. It was a nice way of tying together something I really believe that most every business needs to have. But also it was a nice way of putting it out there where people can look at it and go, oh, okay, so he's the boss of Clarity. What does that mean? And have a conversation.
I love it. You know, an interesting thing for me, for a number of years, I had a friend of mine who was my Clarity coach. And she lived, Sarah Powell is her name, and she lives on a farm about, I think it's like 800, 900 kilometres from Adelaide, literally in the middle of nowhere. She's just been announced last year, the Australian Rural Woman of the Year, and amazing lady. But when I had so much stuff going around in my head, you know, I would just talk to her. I didn't realize she was a clarity coach. It's just that I started speaking to you and getting to know you more, I guess. I kind of realized, well, that's kind of the role that she does with me. I'm confused. I talk to Sarah. She refragments information. She helps me to identify priorities. I went, oh, she helped. After I talked to her, I feel clear. And I think that that's what you do. And that's an extraordinarily valuable gift for people, Jeff. So you know, and everyone that I know that works with you really reinforces that. So, mate, let's get going. And the first question I want to ask you is, typically, how does a conversation from a prospective client of yours start?
Look, they normally start off with, hi, Jeff, I'm stuck. Things don't feel right. I really don't know what I'm doing anymore. Help. That's pretty much it. Okay. Or else people go, my business was going really, really well and I've just lost my way and I'm scared I'm going to lose everything because I don't know where to go from here. So it really, you used the term the fog before. It really is people getting caught in brain fog. They had an idea, they had a purpose, or they jumped into doing a business for whatever reason, maybe just to feed their kids or maybe just because it was something they were good at. But they go along and then all of a sudden, they just feel like they're in the middle of nowhere and they don't know where the hell to go. They can't see where they need to be going. And that's normally when they come to me.
An interesting kind of point in there as well, though, is I think that I encounter a lot of people who they've had a very successful business for a long period of time. The world has changed. And all of a sudden now they're kind of struggling a little bit to kind of keep up with this changing world. And it's like they go, well what do I do now? You know, they got so accustomed to the business being successful and a never-ending stream of customers that it's like, well, okay, everything's changed. Have I got the energy to do this? Where do I start? What do I do? I mean, I just literally got off a coaching call to a client who is going through that scenario saying, God, I've been in business for 25 years. I feel kind of silly. I should know all the answers. I should, surely I know better. And I said, man, you're human. We all go through this. I've been in business for decades. And the clarity thing is certainly something you've got to work on every day. Are there any other kind of conversation starters or issues that cause people to pick up the phone, Jeff?
Yeah, look, I've just finished working with a local guy. He's a Video Easy franchisee. He's been doing 15 years. And as we know, with Netflix and everything, the DVD rental market's dying. So he came to me and said, I'm in a dying business. I owe too much money to walk away from it. What the hell do I do? So what we did was we organized for him to buy the local real estate agent, news agent rather, and relocate the news agency inside his DVD rental shop, so he actually had some cash flow. And we got him a lotto agency, so he's got more cash flow and more foot traffic. So he's actually renting out more DVDs now than he was 12 months ago because we've just increased his foot traffic. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people come to me, they go, technology has really hit my industry. I don't know what to do. How do I survive or how do I exit? Look, I often work with people on what I call the three C's. One's clarity, one's command, and one's control. So clarity is about where you are now, who you serve, how you serve, what problems you solve, and where you want to be in 12 to 36 months. Command is about commanding the resources and skills you need to get there. And sometimes that means outsourcing or employing someone like me. And control is literally putting your business on cruise control and working out an exit strategy if that's what you want to do. So we've done that with him. But people often come to me, they just don't know what they don't know. You know, the old learning model where you go from unconsciously incompetent to unconsciously competent. Well, a lot of business people are consciously incompetent in the sense that they know something's not right and they don't know how to fix it. And that's when they come and talk to someone like me.
Yeah, and I kind of get that. I think I've certainly experienced that in my own business, and I've been on the giving end where you walk in somewhere and it seems so obvious what the issue is, and you know, but of course when you're in the belly of the beast, not everything is that obvious, and I think that's a part of the challenge. I think a second part of this though is often people are embarrassed. You know, I should know better. I should have the answers. Or my problem is I feel kind of silly. And the point I want to make here, you should never, ever feel silly about reaching out and asking people to help you to get more clear. I think that, you know, fear of what other people are going to think of us, I think destroys more businesses than just about anything else. Because by the time people reach out, it's often so much harder to do anything about it. What's your take on that, mate?
Oh, look, absolutely true. In fact, I had a client last year tell me I was like a psychologist. And he said, yeah, when you go to a psychologist, the first thing you got to do is admit you need help. Secondly, you've got to find the right person to work with. And thirdly, you've got to do what they tell you. And you're right. The thing that I've seen destroy most businesses, especially small business, I'm talking sub $10 million businesses that don't survive after their first 5 years, is they are too embarrassed to ask for help. They almost think like because they've hung out their shingle or they've got their ABN number that they're supposed to know everything instead of understanding that all they're doing is actually starting a lifelong journey of learning. For me, that's exciting. I love learning. I love feeding my head. Not everyone does that, but people get caught up in worrying too much about what other people think. And I think for everyone on the call, if you're in a small business, the best thing you can do is stop worrying about what other people think and start focusing on what you need to do to make sure you've got the life you and your family want to live. And that's my big thing is I teach people, I work on a thing called LQ, which is live a larger life. My purpose is to help business people get to the place where they can live a larger life for them and their families and have their head and wallet space to start giving back to their community. And that's sort of my mission, if you like, my purpose.
Cool. I love it. Okay, let's move on, mate. Question number two here. I'm interested in your thoughts. Why do you think we're struggling with clarity now? And we've got a couple hundred people on this call. So there's obviously a whole pile of people or people that registered. I can't see the info box in front of me here. But, you know, so, you know, why do you think we're struggling with clarity now? There's obviously interest in it. What are your thoughts?
Look, the reason we're struggling with clarity now, the main thing is just information overload. I was speaking to a professor from the Australian Graduate School of Management a couple of years ago, and he said they'd done research that said the old Saturday morning, Sydney Morning Herald or Age, the big one there, actually contained more knowledge than the average medieval peasant learnt in their entire life. Now, you take that to where we are now, connected society. It's on 24/7. I'm watching a movie. I see an actor. I can't remember where he's in. I pick up my phone and I look him up and go, oh, that's right. I saw him in this movie. We're connected all the time. Because we're connected all the time, our attention spans are getting shorter. And we're getting absolutely overwhelmed with information. I don't know about other people. Last year, I had a year of deliberate overwhelm where I took on far more than I could possibly get through. But I've talked to a lot of people, and they've all got heaps and heaps of courses they've downloaded from online and heaps of things to read, all clogging up their hard drive that they've got to. They've actually created what I call a someday maybe file, where they've just got terabytes almost of information. And there's also this fear of missing out, I think.
Yeah, sure.
We get caught up in that, and we get told what the latest and greatest thing is, and gee, if you're not doing that, it's no good. And we get confused. I mean, you think about it. For so long, we were told something as simple as eggs. You can't eat eggs because they'll affect your cholesterol, and cholesterol causes heart disease. Well, after 10 or 15 years of that being believed, they've turned around and said, actually, eat as many eggs as you like. They don't affect your cholesterol, and there's a severe doubt about whether cholesterol actually causes heart disease. So not only are we bombarded with too much information, and we want to try and be seen to be keeping up with the Joneses, but we're also getting information which is directly conflicting with what we've been told before. So that's a big issue as well. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, Facebook can be fantastic, but I tell you what, there are a lot of people on Facebook who are putting forward a life that they're supposedly living that they're really not. But a lot of people think, my God, how dreadful is my life, because I'm not living the life that, you know, Joe Bloggs is showing online.
I don't know. It's I think the bottom line now is there's so much stuff going on that our clarity is getting crowded, and that's where I think we've got to learn how to cope in 2016 and beyond. I think that, 10 years ago, we didn't have anywhere near as much stuff. I always say, I don't know what we did before we had email, but obviously we must have been all sitting around just kind of scratching our heads, wondering what did we do with all of our time. Same with social media. We must have had so much time on our hands before all these things came along. But of course, it's not the case, but they're certainly taking up time, and we don't have a strategy for dealing with them. But that's not really what our webinar is about. So we're going to keep moving on from that. I want to ask you another question. Do you think that a lack of clarity is more of an issue for any particular industry sector or not?
Look, I think it's an issue for all industry sectors. They're all being buffeted by the winds of change, to use a cliche. They're all suffering overwhelm. There's huge shifts happening economically. I mean, you know, you listen to the newspapers. I try not to, because, you know, they're getting like the Americans, and they're working very much off trying to create a fear of everything in us. But, you know, the mining boom's gone. So before that, Australia rode on the sheep's back, and then we rode on the mining boom. Now there's something else. But every industry is getting impacted by technology and by this increasing connectedness. Look, I personally would not like to be in retail. The example I gave before of the guy, my client George, who's actually rents out DVDs. We've done something there which is full stall, but all we've done was full stall. His industry's dead. So there are industries that are going to be dying all the time. I think retail is the main one. I mean, look, I used to love when I was flying and travelling around, going to the newsagent and airport and grabbing a couple of books to read. I mean, that was good. But you know what? Newsagents at airports are showrooms now for people to go away and download stuff on the Kindle. They're not buying as much. So
don't know if I agree with you 100% on those points, mate, but I again, people are buying more books than ever, and retail.
Which is great.
What I see in the reality, though, and I take your points on board, though, is that if you're in an industry that perhaps is struggling, they're the industries that are probably, you know, or a lot of change is happening, and yep. They're the ones where I think maybe people can struggle with clarity, because it feels like the future is uncertain. And that's certainly a lot of the industry groups that I perhaps have presented at in the last 3 or 4 years. The lack of clarity is that we're not 100% sure on what direction our industry is going to take. Retailers, for example, going, well, we're concerned about online, but the reality is, well, we've got to refigure. We've got to come up with a new way of doing business. Retail is never going to stop. We're always going to be buying stuff, and people aren't only just going to buy online, but what do we need to do to still be relevant to consumers? And I think you've got to move beyond the fear of, oh my God, it's the end of times. And that's, again, that prevents us from being clear. And I see that as perhaps one of the kind of challenges there.
I think the word you use, which is is being relevance. I think any industry can ignore technology if it remains relevant to their clients. And that's how retail's going to win. The ones that make you feel welcome and wanted and you know, it's your local. I mean, my local bottle shop, they've got a great crew in there. They're fantastic people. They're bright, they're friendly, they know you. They really keep everything going. So that's terrific. So yeah, relevance is really important. And I think if you understand how you're relevant to your clients, which means you understand what the problem is, or problems plural are, that you solve for them, then you remain relevant, which helps you avoid procrastination, avoid this brain fog, and actually start having some clarity about where you need to go and what you need to do.
And we'll come back to that in a little bit later when we start talking a bit about having the big why, but I do believe that they're closely tied together. You're not sure of your future, lack of relevance, then it's how can you not have a bit of fog around you or a lack of clarity? Righto, mate, let's move on to the next one here. Question here is, what is SBOS, SBOS? Now, this is something that you've talked about and you've shared with me. Tell us your take on this.
SBOS stands for Shiny Bright Object Syndrome, and it's tied into a number of things that we have going on, and it ties into what we were just talking about. Firstly, everyone's looking for the magic bullet. So, you know, our industry or our business isn't happening the way we want. We want help. We want to get out of it. There's got to be a magic bullet. Especially if you're an online business or thinking about moving online, you've got all those internet marketers coming out with a brand new program every 5 minutes, which they market extremely well. And you go, wow, that's got to be the magic bullet. I'll jump on that. And before you give that a full run through or actually finish the program, there's another one and you jump on that. So part of it's fear of missing out. Part of it is wanting an answer that just makes you feel good about what you're doing and does it with as little pain as possible, which is a very human thing. Mm-hmm. So SBOS is this absolute focus on always trying to find the next shiny, bright object because you think it's going to fix whatever you've identified as your problems. And the thing, in reality, it doesn't.
I also think, and I think it's a really good point, for me, what I see with a lot of my clients, and certainly my own work in the last, you know, 1,000 years, it feels like, is that when you're chasing shiny, bright objects or butterflies, I find that you're doing that because you're actually not clear about the direction of your own business. And you know, your big why isn't clarified. There's a whole pile of other things that aren't quite clear. So that gives you the reason to chase the other things. When I work with someone who is totally focused and totally clear about where they're heading and the direction and their business, they're not blocked, man, they don't have distractions because the clarity and sharpness of where they're going is so burned into their brain that nothing is going to get in the way of it. And so I'm going to go out there and say, if you're a chaser of bright, shiny objects, maybe it's a bit of a symptom that you need to address some other things in your business as well. But what's your take on that, mate?
No, absolutely agree. It's the fact that if people just know or feel something's wrong and they're looking for any way to fix it, and like I say, shiny, bright objects tend to be people looking for a magic bullet. Mm. Then that's because they're not clear on what they're doing. They're not clear on what they need to do. It might be something as simple as they're not clear on what skills or resources they need to bring into their business to achieve what they're setting out to do. So clarity is more than goal setting, but goal setting is a major part of it. If you don't have somewhere to aim your business at, then you're just going to spin your wheels. Sorry, just quickly, I talk to people about vision, mission and values, which is a bit old-fashioned, but for me, your vision is your destination. Your mission is your roadmap on how you're going to get there, and your values is the fuel that drives you there. And what I'm finding is, even if sometimes people have a vision, it's what I call an output goal. Their vision is, I want to lose 40 kilos, but they don't have the process goals, which is the mission to back it up and how to get there. So they look for the magic bullet.
I agree, mate. Okay, next question. Question number 5. You talk about push and focus. So maybe talk us through these a little bit. These are acronyms, I believe. So yep. Tell us how that kind of works, mate.
All right. Well, both of these are sort of anti-SBOS type things. So push stands for persist until something happens. So rather than jumping around every 5 or 10 minutes to try and find the magic bullet, pick something and work it through to its end. That's not to say you keep doing something that's no longer serving you, but you've got to give things a decent chance to work. So if you push or persist until something happens, you're then able to make a decision on whether it's right or wrong for you. But changing every 5 minutes doesn't happen. And focus is really just the same thing. It's just follow one course until successful. Mm-hmm. Again, it's my way of working with clients to try and stop them jumping all over the place and trying to find the next bright, shiny object, or else trying to do 10 different things at once instead of just trying to nail something really, really solidly and really well. Because that's the other myth, and that's why people lose clarity, is we've bought into this entire myth of multitasking, which isn't. It's task switching. And I think there's some research from our university that shows that if you're working and the phone goes, when you answer the phone, it takes you 25 minutes to get back mentally to where you were, what you were working on. But on average in a working day, we get interrupted every 11 minutes. So we're never actually getting back to where we were. That's the other thing that loses our clarity, is that we're doing this multitasking thing and never able to get back on task. So we try to do too much. We're looking for the magic bullets, and we're not giving anything a time to actually work or not work for us.
But I reckon 11 minutes in between distractions or interruptions is a lifetime. I think most of us are getting interruptions every minute these days. If you have everything turned on, social media, email, phones, the whole thing, that's the real challenge, isn't it? And it's very, very interesting. I did an exercise a couple of years ago because, again, from a multitasking point of view, I do believe that multitasking is a challenge for clarity. And I wrote an article about it. So I did two sets of exercises that were identical. And one of them I did while multitasking, and one of them I did task by task without multitasking. And it was interesting that that it took me far longer when I was multitasking. I made far more mistakes. Less attention to detail. You know, I did internet banking thing and I'd made a mistake on that, sent the money to the wrong account, which is a bit oopsie, and things along those lines. And I thought, wow. I also did another one where I spent one day multitasking and one day not multitasking, and how did I feel at the end of the day? And I got to say, the day that I spent where I wasn't multitasking, I was so clear, I was so calm, I was so focused, that in its own right for me it is one of the best bits of advice that I would be offering to people, is to learn how to disconnect. I know we've all heard it, but, you know, do we do it? That's the key. And I know how hard it is to do it, but if you really struggle with clarity, the only way to become unclear, or one of the best ways to become unclear, to at least get your brain thinking better so that you can actually start making better decisions, is to batch work when you're not connected, when your brain has the ability to take a deep breath and actually think. And I think it's one of the biggest issues we face in the world these days, is the lack of ability to do that.
There's a thing called a compression session. They've done a lot of research, and they found that 90 minutes is the longest that we can sort of focus in one hit before we need a break. And they found that for most people, to get one compression session of 90 minutes a day is really good. Two's fantastic, and three is absolutely outstanding. So what I try and do with clients is I try and get them to block some time, even if it's only half an hour, put it in their diary to do just one thing. I'm a great believer, and if it's not in your calendar, it's not in your diary, it doesn't happen. I work with my clients on a to-don't list more than a to-do list, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So cut down the things you don't want to do. But this idea of a compression session is, it's in your diary, and you know, 9:30 today, I'm going to be working on web copy, or I'm going to be working on solving a client or something. So from 9:30 through to 11 o'clock, that's it. Phone goes off, social media goes off, email goes off, and you get stuck into it. And in fact, one of the other things is, email is a great tool, but it's one of our biggest interrupters. I try and get people to do their emails in blocks. I do my email pretty much at 11 o'clock and 4 o'clock, and in between times I don't have it on. Yeah. Because otherwise what happens is email makes you respond to someone else's agenda all the time. And again, if you're responding to someone else's agenda all the time, that results in a lack of clarity about what you should be doing right this moment today to take your business to where you want it to go. So there's an awful lot of stuff there.
I think the minute you start email, your day then is spent responding to everyone else's demands, unless you've got the strength to be able to kind of turn it off. And you know, it was interesting for me. I did a retreat a little while ago, a health farm. So there was no internet, no internet. No. So the first day, I'm like a heroin junkie, you know, trying to find the walls of this valley to get out. Just one bar, I would have paid $10,000 for one. You know, I was pathetic. And it was interesting. So I spent the whole week. It was fabulous. I never thought so clearly as I did that week after the first day of overcoming my addiction. But it was interesting when I left and I was driving up the road, and of course my phone, the signal kicked in, and I had about, I think it was about 1,200 emails.
Yep.
I went to a little coffee shop and sat down and thought, oh God, okay, this is a bit overwhelming. I thought, you know what? I'm going to answer them. And it took me 2 hours to answer them. I mean, of course, most of them were, you know, junk and crap and didn't really need to be responded to. There was probably a good 200 or 300 that needed some form of attention. But I addressed them all in 2 hours. And I kind of went, wow, you know, normally in the space of a week, I might spend 4 or 5 hours a day on emailing. You know, that's 30-odd hours. Yet I was able to do that in 2 hours. And I thought, wow, isn't that an interesting little kind of rethink about how we're doing? I mean, I would love to just spend 2 hours a week doing email. But of course, that's not quite the reality when people, you know, want us to get back to them and all the rest of it. But the whole concept of what we're trying to get across here, folks, is about thinking a little bit differently. You know, if you just push to get clear, sometimes you've got to look at the reasons for why you're not clear and try some different work practices, try some different techniques, you know, try some, operating. And another thing that I find particularly helpful for me is at 5 till 7, or even 5 a.m. till 8 a.m. So I'm at my desk at 5 a.m. in the morning religiously, and the first couple of hours I get all of my work pretty much done, you know, for the day. And I really try hard not to turn on my email unless I'm necessarily waiting for something. But then again, I kind of set up the day and plan, and I find again that that keeps me clear and focused throughout the day, as opposed to kind of starting at 9 and then bang, open the email and I'm kind of hit and off and running. So anyway, we'll talk about that stuff a little bit more as we go. Jeff, on to question number 6. Look, you know what? I'm not really going to spend a lot of time on this, mate, because I think we kind of covered it. What does it look like when someone is really clear about their business? But do you want to add just your thoughts on that? Someone who you've come across, you go, yep, so laser focused. This is what it looks like.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the cliche is they bounce out of bed every day looking forward to what they're going to do. And that doesn't happen for most of us. But it can happen for more of us if we're really clear about where we're taking our business and alongside that, where we're taking our life. I had some financial planning clients for 3 years there, and we tripled the size of their business the first 12 months. But they were guys where every second Tuesday, I'd wake up, I'm going to see the boys today. Fantastic. And I'd be charged. I'd be really looking forward to see them because they were great guys. They were great clients. They were coachable. And they were eager to learn. They just kept, feed me, tell me what to do, make us better. So for me, that was the real buzz, as opposed to another client that I ended up firing, where I go, oh, God, it's Wednesday. I've got to go see John again. And that was just dreadful for me. So I took the point and I got rid of them. But when people are really clear about their business, it all makes sense. There are a couple of things people need to build into their day. We all like to have a sense of accomplishment at the end of the day, and we all like to try and do something we're enjoying. So even though it might be our perfect purpose and all that sort of stuff, if we can build into our day that we do it at the end of the day, we have a sense of accomplishment and that we've enjoyed at some level what we've done during the day, that helps us. And if we're clear about our business, it's so much easier to build those two things into your day. The people who are clear about their business, they know that every day where they're going, what has to be achieved. They're not adrift. They're not spinning their wheels. They're not turning around in a circle in this horrible brain fog going, I know I should be doing something. I don't know what it should be. People know what they should be doing. They move. They make things happen. And therefore, they do have that sense of accomplishment at the end of the day. And therefore, that sort of self-fulfilling, if you like, that helps top up your tank of enjoyment and energy so you move forward. Nothing's more debilitating than being stuck in this brain fog and procrastinating, knowing something's wrong and you just don't know how to fix it.
I couldn't agree more. And again, that point we made earlier on there about if you're really deliberating on a decision, you know, you can't make a decision one way or another, or something's missing, et cetera, et cetera. Clarity is about overcoming all of that kind of stuff. So it goes back to the point, what we've talked about, I think, up until now is a lot about, you know, the causes for why we lack clarity, the challenges, the fact that you're not alone. Please don't think that if you feel like you struggle with clarity, you're the only one in the world. Believe me, you are not We all feel like this from time to time. But let's start to look now a little bit. Let's go a little bit deeper on what are some of the things that we need to do. And you just started touching on this then, okay? The big why. And look, we all get that. Everyone, we've all been told, Simon Sinek has told us all, you know, you got to have a big why. You know, we're all kind of had it beaten into us. Okay, I get it. We've got to have a big why. But sometimes it's not that easy to have the big why. That's certainly something that I've come across in my life, and a lot of people that I've looked around at. It's, you know, it's not as easy to just say, well, my big why is. Not everyone has that same, you know, glaring realization about what their big why is. So anyway, I'm going to throw it over to you, mate. Tell me what your thoughts are around this. Again, why it's so important for clarity, and any other advice you want to offer around this, Jeff.
So this is just a really small question. I'll just answer it in 5 words.
I'll give you
a
shot. Yeah, that's right.
Look, I suppose your why and your purpose, they're two words, terms that are used almost interchangeably. And there's a lot of woo-woo built into those. But it is important. You do need a why. But so for me, my why I do stuff is I give people clarity so they can live a larger life. But that's what I call my public why. I believe we need a public and a private why. Okay, my private why is I love what I do. I happen to think I'm bloody good at it. And doing what I do enables me to give my family a good lifestyle. But if I went to you, Andrew, and said, Andrew, you need to hire me as your clarity coach because I want to give my family a really good lifestyle, you're going to go, well, so does everyone, and that's not a good reason to hire you. Mm. So, but my public reason is I give people clarity so they can live a larger life, to sum it up quickly. And that's congruent with what I want. I mean, I truly believe that. I mean, I'm on a mission so that I can help 1,000 businesses thrive past their first 5 years. That's something I'm driving. And I genuinely want to do that, and that's very strong and resonates with me. But I'm also aware that's my public why, and I have a private why. And this is where I think Simon Sinek misses, is that we all need a big why, but sometimes it doesn't have to be a huge why. Sometimes the why can be as simple as, I want to see my kids have a better life than me. And you know what? That's a bloody good why to have for people. It doesn't have to be a Mother Teresa, I want to change the world, or a Steve Jobs, I want to put a dent in the universe thing. But you've got to be clear about what it is that's going to energize you and make you go and do stuff. So that's where I came up with this thought about a public and a private why, because for me, both those things energize me and it helped me get very clear on where I'm going and what I'm doing. And that's what we need to do. There's lots of people. There's a guy called Steve Pavlina, P-A-V-L-I-N-A, and he's at stevepavlina.com. This isn't, I don't get paid any money or anything, but he's been a self-development writer for decades. But he's got a couple of processes on his website on how to find out why. Just go to stevepavlina.com, which are really, really great processes to do. There's a lot of people out there. The Live Your Legend guy, Scott Dinsmore, who unfortunately died last year, he's got a program that you can download for free, which is like 24 questions to ask to find your why. The thing is, there are a million ways to things to look at to find your why, but I find that often your purpose and your why is tied to what you do in your life that helps others and makes you feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, so, I agree, mate. Sorry, keep going.
No, so for me, if anyone's on the call saying, oh, I don't know what my why is, I don't have a purpose and I'm a dreadful human being because everything I read in here tells me I need a why and I need a purpose, just ask yourself that simple question. What do you do that you're good at doing, that you enjoy doing, that helps others? Mm. So if you nail that, you found your why, I think. And often what it is, what you do ends up being your purpose if you've aligned those things. So you know, I enjoy what I'm doing. I think I'm really good at it. And I help others. So for me, that's my purpose, is this whole clarity geek that I'm doing.
You mentioned a term here, pragmatic passion. Sorry to interrupt you there, mate. I found that an interesting term.
Okay. Pragmatic passion is my sort of pushback against a lot of the there's this thing that they've attributed to everyone from Lao Tzu to Einstein online that says, you know, find your passion and you'll never have a job again.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to call BS on that. I've got a really good friend who's mad about guitar playing. He's been playing guitar since he's 8 years old. He owns Gibsons. He's got Fender Stratocasters. He's actually taken classes with Eric Clapton. He goes to guitar camps all around the world. He's in his 40s and he's a shit guitarist. He's dreadful. Right? But he's so passionate about it. He's really lucky he's a good GP. So That's what happened was he's got this passion and he realized that he's not going to go away, but he can't monetize it or anything. And this is the thing I think we miss in this whole passion thing is, as an adult living in this society, you've got to be able to pay your way. So if your passion enables you to pay your way in a way that gives you and your family or your loved ones a lifestyle you want, that's fantastic and you're really lucky. But for most people, it's a question of finding something you're competent or better than competent at, that society will pay you to do, that will enable you to pay your way, look after your family, and also indulge your passion. There's a friend of mine called Andrew Ford who runs a digital marketing agency down in Melbourne. And what he's done is he's built his business around his passion, which is his kids and doing some stuff there. And that's really good advice, is understand if your passion's not something people will pay you for, then you've got to find something that will pay you for. I've got another friend who's gets passionate. He could light up a Carnegie Hall with 1,000 people in it if you got him talking about spending a weekend binge watching the West Wing, drinking beer and eating pizza. He is crazy mad for that. But no one's going to pay him to do it, right? No one's going to pay anyone to binge watch DVD series. I tried to set him up as an online critic and it didn't quite work out. But he also happens to be one of the world's foremost cryptologists, and he does a lot of work for the Australian government. Doesn't like doing the work, but it pays him really well and enables him to have the most incredible collection of DVD series you've ever seen.
And a really comfortable couch, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. Great couch and the huge wall-sized TV, everything around it. But that's his passion, but no one's going to pay him for it. So that's pragmatic passion.
Yeah, okay. Interesting, isn't it? Funny, though. Funny story. I mean, my niece's husband, I'm not quite sure what that makes him. You know, he was a typical kid who was told for years to, you know, get off the computer games and all the rest of it, and like most parents do with their kids. And, of course, now he's a really well-paid software developer with an awesome job and great career ahead of him. And it's always a very thinly veiled na-na-ni-na-na kind of comment that comes out at the bottom line there. I personally, look, I'm a big believer in passion in what you're doing. I can't fake it. I can't do jobs that I'm not passionate about. I never have. I just quit them. But in business, I do believe that passion equals profit. If you can't be passionate, I think it's hard to build a great business if you don't have some passion for it. And I find that the more passionate I am, the more clear I become. But I also think, again, though, and the different angle on this one is sometimes your passion can override your good sense and your clarity.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you start to believe your own rhetoric. And I've worked with a lot of businesses over the year, and what I see in this example for me is where it comes out is when someone starts a partnership with someone, and they go, oh, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be fabulous. My best friend, Billy, and I, we're going to start a florist shop. It's going to be incredible. And you know, you don't want to be the Grinch, but you've got to turn around and say, well, what happens when it's not? You know, how are you going to plan for the divorce? You go, oh, man, hey, don't bring me down with that kind of stuff. It's going to be amazing. And you go, look, you're in the honeymoon stage. You know, everything is awesome. But what happens when you got to, you know, start bringing up the kids and changing the nappies and, you know, like how are you going to survive in that part of your relationship, you know, to use the metaphor kind of concept? And it's often that part that people, you know, don't necessarily, you know, plan for. So the unbridled enthusiasm and passion is lovely. I so enjoy it. But we also need a little bit of a reality check in there as well so that our clarity is not unduly influenced by our passion, I guess, is what I'm trying to say there, mates.
Yeah, look, that's sort of what I'm saying about being pragmatic about it. I mean, you know, a lot of people on this call and a lot of people that you and I deal with are entrepreneurs or business owners. So, you know, and you're right, passion does equal profits and equals a happier life. So hopefully most people who are entrepreneurs or business owners are in it because it's something they're passionate about. But my take on this is it is pushed so hard to people that if you're not doing something you're passionate about, you're wasting your life.
Yeah, which is not true.
It's not true. And there are people, there are always going to be people that are going to ask you want fries with your order and sweep floors and clean toilets. And you know what? That is all honourable work. And usually that's transitional stage work. And we should honour people for that. And we shouldn't look down on anyone who hasn't found their passion and isn't running a business based around it.
I agree. Great point. Awesome point, mate. Awesome point. Righto. Question number 8. What's the Flame and Kipling lens? Now, this is one of the things... Tell us.
Okay, the Kepler lens is part of it's a filter that I use with people when they're goal setting and making decisions. It's based around Rudyard Kipling, the famous writer, Jungle Book and Gunga Din and all that. He said, he's got a short poem that says, "I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who." So the Kipling lens is basically when you're making a decision, let's run it through. What are you doing? Why are you doing it? Who are you doing it for? How are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? And where are you going to do it? That sort of questioning, just using those six words, those six questions, brings a degree of granularity and detail to what you're trying to do that often if it's not the right thing to do, it's going to show up. And if it is the right thing to do, it's going to help you start setting up those sort of process goals to achieve your larger outcome goal. So that's the Kipling lens. It's a bit tongue-in-cheek. I quite like Rudyard Kipling, but I've always done this. I can remember working with Vodafone a decade ago when I was in front of the board of directors, that I actually wrote those things, you know, who, what, when, where, why, and how on the board for a major thing they were doing. I said, right, who's doing it? Who are we doing it for? And, you know, and at the end of it, they decided that they weren't going to spend the $3 million on what was just a ridiculous program anyway. But without running it through that questioning process, they would have committed the money and, you know.
I like it. Mate, it's funny, I have a little bit of a lens that I use. I haven't given it a name yet. I must come up with something. But it's when people are really overly excited about a project, again, kind of talking a bit about where we were a second ago, about the passion perhaps overlooks the common sense. Or overtakes the common sense. And I say, okay, well, first of all, let's do a budget. And so they do a budget and I say, okay, well, let's do another one now. And let's assume that it takes twice as long for this project to start generating money. It costs twice as much and you generate half as much. And then see if it still stacks up. And if it doesn't stack up, then don't do it. And that's a brutal way to do it, I know, and totally unrealistic, but it's a fail-proof way of actually determining whether you should go ahead with something. I think it's never failed me, that model, but every other model has. So,
yeah. dare I say pragmatic? Yeah, it is. Very important.
Let's keep going, my friend. So what is the clarity code? Now, that's something that's, you know, this is your concept. Tell the listeners, what is this all about, mate?
Look, the clarity code's really two things. Firstly, it's a set of an even dozen steps that I take people through to help them gain real clarity about their goals in both their business and their life. I mean, look, yeah, the term life coach is one that I have some issues with, but you can't help someone in their business without necessarily sometimes addressing things in their non-work life. So the clarity code is about helping people get absolute clarity primarily in their business, but the techniques can be used in their personal life as well because the two are so interconnected. The second thing is it's really around my coaching program. Depending on how advanced people are in business, I might work with them for 6 months or I might work with them for 12 months. But it is really based around this 3C concept of absolute clarity about where you are today, who you serve, problem you solve, how you sell it, what your product architecture is, where you want to be in 12 or 16, a whole lot of questions there, but it gives you an absolute solid foundation about here I am today and this is where I want to be in 12 months. And then we move into the command phase of what skills do I have and what skills or resources do I need to move from today to where I want to be. And then the last thing, of course, is actually creating the future, getting in control of things. And I mean, look, you know, it uses a mixture of strategies and tactics, goals and milestones. Look, there's hacks, there's common sense, and really it enables people. I'm all about skill transfer. I like to be a good chiropractor, right? You know, a bad chiropractor, you go and see him and he says, you need to come and see me every fortnight for the rest of your life. And by the way, your children and wife are affecting your back, so I need to see and treat them as well. A good chiropractor says, you've got a sore back, it'll take 6 visits, I'll fix it. Now bugger off and come back and see me when you're hurting again. Mm-hmm. So I like to try and be a good chiropractor in that I'll skill transfer and work with people. So I don't do done for you or done to you, I do done with you. So at the end of the 6 or 12 months with me, they've got the skills and they've got the understanding of how to crack their own clarity code and they can go off and do what they need to do. So you know, this sort of thing that I do, it works off firstly aligning and reconciling your public and private why. Determining a thing I call your still point. In the KPI program, they talk about your intersection. Mine happens to be learning and strategy, but there's another step. So that's the knowledge side. The other side's the action side, and I happen to love teaching. So for me, that's my still point, is where I've got a confluence between teaching, strategy, and learning. That's my still point. That's my place of power, if you want to put it in that thing. So we help people determine their still point. We help them decide whether that's they're building a business on a bankable skill, a pragmatic passion, or something that absolutely drives them crazy and they have to do it. Help them to accept they've got to change. Then we start running things through the Kipling lens. We really help them establish where they are now. Then we choose their destination. We measure the difference between the two, do the skills and assets stuff, decide whether they get the help, plan their path to their destination, take action, then we review, reset, and do it all over again. I've broken the Clarity Code skill set down, if you like, into 21 modules of knowledge. Everyone's got to do the first date because they're all about establishing that clear, this is where I am now and this is where I want to be. But the rest of them, we do in whatever order the client needs. So it's not like we go 1 to 21 in order, but we do 1 to 8, then we might do number 12, number 16, number 20, number 9, whatever. So it's quite customised. But the whole point of it is for people to be able to walk away and go, I know where I am, I know where I want to go, I know what I've got to do to get there, and I know what other resources I need to get there, and then they go and they do it. So that's the Clarity Code.
So it's a process to follow based on your experience in the 12 steps that you can follow to kind of get that clarity out. Nice. Mate, something you talked about earlier there in that was that whole, you know, the importance of trying to get back to what really the big issue is. It's funny, I noticed myself, you know, when I've been coaching or meeting with people in business and they've got some problems, for me, a real trigger on what are to get to the real issues are things like, I'll start offering them advice. So they'll come to me typically and go, oh, you know, I need more customers. You go, right, okay, so you need more customers, all right. So can you do this? Can you do this? Can you do this? And everything that you suggest, they basically say, no, we can't do that. No, well, no, we can't. No. So after I've had three or four no's, I kind of stop the conversation and I go, what's the real problem here? And that's when the conversation gets a bit uncomfortable. And often it comes back to their relationships in trouble. They've perhaps lost their mojo. You know, they're burnt out and everything is too hard. They're worried about losing the house financially, but they don't want to tell anyone. There's always a deeper issue, yet they're trying to fix the symptoms, not fix the issue. And once I'm in that conversation where I go, right, okay, yes, my relationship's broken down with my partner and I think we're going to get divorced. Go, okay. Before you can fix anything in your business, you've got to fix that. You know, that's going to be the thing that you've got to work out. How's that look? Get divorced, don't get divorced, whatever it might be. But right here, right now, the things you're trying to address in your business will never happen until you kind of address the underlying issue. And I know that can be a little bit of a challenge because you go, but I'll go broke in the meantime. Well, that might happen anyway, you know, at this rate because you haven't got the right headspace or the clarity to do what it takes in business. So, again, this is a bit of self-analysis. If you are coming up with all the reasons why you can't do something, what is that underlying issue around that? So, as a bit of a thought. But I love the Clarity Code, Jeff. I just think that's a really valuable little process to follow.
Next,
I was going to say, mate, have you got maybe just a short example, if you can, about a client that maybe you've walked through with this?
Look, probably the easiest one, I was talking about the financial planners I've worked with. Now, like I say, normally it's a 6 to 12-month process. I worked with these guys for 12 months, tripled the size of their business, and then was on retainer for 2 years. So that was a lovely thing. And only recently have I finished working with them because they've got a lot of other things to go on and they need time to bed in stuff. But how it worked with them was, the process for me normally is I start with a thing called a detangled day where I lock the decision makers of a business in a room with me in a whiteboard for 6 to 8 hours, and we strip it back to bedrock and we rebuild the whole business and we understand who their best clients are and their product architecture and a whole heap of stuff. And out of that, people become very, very clear on deficits and things they need to do in their business to move it forward. And they usually become very, very clear about their end game. And then we move into the Clarity Code stuff where we start absolutely nailing down all the details of that sort of stuff. So I did that with these guys. Now, these guys were a small financial planning firm up here on the Central Coast in New South Wales. Both go-getters, but they really weren't going very far, and they happened to hear me talk at a business networking thing, and they did a detangling day with me, and they got really excited, and then they engaged me as their coach. And what we did was we found that they actually had some significant skills in terms of administration and whatnot. So we ended up setting up their business as an administration hub, primarily for other financial planners, because financial planners have got an enormous amount of admin to do and they hate doing it. So these guys were able to take on that burden through their own systems, which was fantastic. So other financial planners could just look after their clients. So they've started to grow. And then we started realizing they needed to get a bigger footprint. So we then went out and helped them find and then buy couple of other practices. We put in place their internal policies, procedures. We did the vision, mission and values thing with them. But long and short of it was they were eminently coachable. They wanted to do better. And they used to turn up every meeting I had with them and go, right, what do we have to do in the next fortnight? Because I run things the fortnightly cycle. And they went through the whole thing. And that's not to say it was smooth sailing, because you come across things like, oh, no, we can't do that. And then you dig in, there's something happening outside, like you're talking about, some relationship issues. Or being financial planners, you know, they're the people that they were financial planning for who held all their products, there were certain things they wouldn't let them do, which was a shame because we could have done some interesting stuff. But the bottom line is they went through it and they now understand and they're off carving their own path out, and they've gone from being a little suburban wayside, if you like, to in their particular dealer group being one of the heavy hitters, and they're on a directorship board, and when they speak, their dealer group listens, which is great.
Nice, mate. Just quickly there, thanks for that. A couple of little bits of feedback. We've got the lovely Sharon Corrigan on the line there. Overwhelm leads to a lack of clarity, which in turn leads to procrastination and not getting stuff done. Nice, I agree completely, Sharon.
Absolutely.
You've said what took us half an hour to say. Annetta, excellent points about multitasking. Beyond all the productivity issues, I find that's extremely exhausting and often even depressing. I agree with you there. I actually find multitasking is depressing. I agree. And Muhammad, that's quite funny. Six honest serving men in regard to the Kipling lens. Where can you find those? Tongue in cheek. Insane. I do love that. All right, mate, we've got to keep going. We're almost out of time now, so we've only a couple of short answers to these next ones. How do you keep this one short? I don't know. You talk about trust, mostly trust yourself. How do we do this?
Look, I think it's being honest with yourself. I think look, I'm not a big fan of neuro-linguistic programming, but there's one question that I find they use which can help you, which is, if I knew exactly the right thing to do at this moment in time, what would it be? And, and often an answer pops up when you ask yourself that question. And then the next step to that is, well, that answer's popped up out of my subconscious or wherever. I'm going to trust myself to have a go at it. We don't trust ourselves because we keep getting told either we're not good enough or we don't know enough. And like I say, this is part of this information overload thing. I think you've just got to listen. My dad taught me when I was a kid, we've all got this little voice in the back of our head that scratches us, and we usually ignore it at our peril. And I've certainly found that in my life. So I try and be calm enough to tune into that little voice in the back of my head when I'm making any major decision. And if it sort of says it's the wrong thing to do, well, I'll back off, and it hasn't let me down yet. So long and short of it, how do you trust yourself? You've got to develop yourself enough self-awareness to actually back yourself. So that means being confident and trust and believing in yourself, as cliched as that sounds, I know.
I think it's true, though. But also something that I think is important to add to that is also look at your history. You know, look at what you've done. Look at where you've, you know, got things right. Look at the successes you've had in the past and how you've achieved them, and the runs on the board. I've been talking a lot about imposter syndrome of late. Did a webinar about it the other day. A podcast interview. Written an article on Inc. about it. You know, trust is a challenge. If you want to know a bit more about that, go to my Facebook page or my blog, and there's certainly some stuff in there as well. So, but it's hard. It's hard that, you know, we talk about trust, but sometimes not that easy. Okay, and last little bits and pieces. We get clarity. How do we keep it, Jeff?
All right. You've got to be honest with yourself and understand that the goals you set today may change. I don't know about you, but I was like a typical kid. I wanted to be an astronaut when I grew up, but I'm not. And then I want... And then I wanted to be a teacher, and when I finished my teaching degree, there were 230 of us graduating with 30 jobs in the state of Victoria. So I ended up not being a teacher in the school sense, I ended up becoming a teacher in the organisations I've worked in, which is sort of what I do now. So how do you keep clarity? You've got to keep rechecking, right? The biggest problem with business plans and planning is most people turn those things into what I call shelf furniture. They do a plan and it sits on the shelf till it's time to do next year's plan. They don't look at it. I would suggest that you carve out probably once a month, 2 or 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon with a bottle of red, an empty glass, which you fill several times, and sit down and go forward through your goals and what's happening in your business and in your life. And does it still make sense? Is it still progressing? Or if things suddenly no longer matter to you and you need to change? The only way you can keep clarity is by rechecking, resetting. You know, the old cliche thing about, you know, if you're flying from here to Hong Kong, the plane doesn't fly straight, it goes off course and back, but it gets here in the end. It's true with clarity as well. Mm. If you don't recheck and reset, you lose it and then you find yourself in brain fog again. But if you do regularly sit down and think about it, just think, it's just sitting down and thinking, is this still important to me? Is this still what I want to do? Is this still driving me? Does it fill me with energy? And if the answer is yes, you keep going. If the answer is no, then you go, right, what do I need to change to get those things back?
It's a daily task, isn't it? It's a daily activity in many respects to stay focused, stay clear, and to make the time, the quality time. Don't try and say, am I clear in the midst of the craziness? You've got to do it when the craziness is not around, which means you've got to make the time for clear thinking. You've got to make the space in the course of your day. I'm such a big believer of this. And, mate, just to wander up, a couple of last little bits of advice for the listeners?
Yeah, look, carve out some time in your diary, put it in your calendar for reflection time just to think about your business and your life. That's really, really important. Move away from multitasking, get your email into a couple of blocks of time, and, you know, try and set goals which are meaningful to you. That's it. Find a process, find someone to talk to. Understand you can't do it all yourself. You know, find a mentor or a coach, but find someone who's going to lend you an ear and just help you get out of the brain fog and move forward.
Yeah, great, mate. Nice. And a couple of other little bits of feedback from people that we've got there. Pear, great seminar. Well done, guys. Thank you, Pear. Sharon again, we trust sometimes it's just our ego kicking in to protect us from the unknown. Absolutely. The unknown is not there to hurt us. Thank the ego. Feel the fear and step up anyway. Sharon, you're being very deep today. I love this. Thank you for your thought. Yeah. Jerry, first time, good information. I do this daily, which is around the clarity. And Jeff Anderson, great, thank you. Nice, good on you, Jeff. Last couple of little thoughts, and I'll tell you how you can take advantage of Jeff's offer, folks. A lot of good advice, I would hope, in there. Nice to have a discussion. Find out more about Jeff. Thank you so much for today, Jeff. I so appreciate having you on the line, mate, and sharing your wisdom. And I'll let you say goodbye in a second, but I just wanted to say, if you want to take advantages, look, Jeff is a seriously generous guy. He's not going to try and flog you a whole pile of stuff or any of this kind of jazz. You want a free silver bullet strategy session with Jeff, valued at $300. You know, got a nagging question, feeling overwhelmed, problems, not sure the next step. Really, really easy. You just email jeff@theclarityceo.com, put AG webinar in the subject line, and he's got a process that he'll follow for you to be able to take advantage of that. And, you know, I've got to say, why wouldn't you do that? You know, if you needed to get a bit of clarity in what it is that you're doing. And, you know, again, Jeff, look, thank you so much for that, mate. That's a really generous offer, and I appreciate you being on the line and giving up your really valuable time a great deal, mate.
Look, Andrew, thanks for the opportunity to talk to everyone. Thanks for everyone who stayed. And, mate, I always enjoy our chats. Always get a lot out of them. And, you know, today was no exception. Loved it. So thanks again for the opportunity. It was terrific.
Good on you, Jeff. Thank you, mate. And folks, as always, you know, I'm trying to do a webinar every month these days. I'll let you know. You're obviously, if you've found out about this one somehow, I've been able to stalk you appropriately. Thanks for committing your time. I know everyone is super, super busy. I'm trying to make sure these topics are really relevant for you in business. If you've got any ideas or thoughts that you'd like to share, please let me know. Over the next 6 months, I've got some really interesting people that I'm going to introduce you to. I'm going to introduce you to a lady called Rosemary Shapiro-Liu. Many of you know her. She's going to talk about discovering the mentor within. Another wonderful friend of mine, Michelle Rushton, who's got a book coming out called Crazy Busy. So I'm going to get her on the line for a webinar as well. I'll get Nick Bowditch on the line. We'll do a webinar about something or other. Who knows? But I'm going to try and keep these coming as I think they're of value. So any feedback, any ideas, anything I can do to improve this, any guests that you perhaps like to hear about, you know what, just let us know. And I'd really appreciate that as well. If you want any more of my stuff, that's how you can find me. You know, my website's pretty straightforward. All the other places, check out my blog. And last but not least, I certainly hope that you feel a little bit clearer, or whatever you took out of today's webinar. You might feel more confused, but maybe it'll lead you to clarity. I just really hope that that you did get great value out of today. And thank you very much for all of your nice comments and feedback as well. Kind of screaming through the comment box now too. So thanks, everyone. Sorry to go a couple of little minutes long. Thanks again, Jeff. And I'll talk to everyone somewhere very, very soon, I'm sure. All right. Take care, guys. Bye.
Be well.